Thank you for listening to Enable This Week. I have a little history lesson for you. It all started with last week's program on costume contact lenses. I began to wonder about the history of contact lenses. I have that for you. And then one thing led to another, and I found myself researching the history of sunglasses. And before long, I had discovered the history of the telescope, a forerunner of the special optical device now used by people with low vision. First, the question that got me started on this journey through time. When were contact lenses invented? This information came from the All About Vision website. And the question is the same. When were contact lenses invented? The article was written by a doctor of optometry called Gary Heiting. He says, though contact lenses seem to be a recent phenomenon, the famous Italian architect, mathematician, and inventor, Leonardo da Vinci, who lived from 1452 to 1519, produced the first known sketches in 1508 that suggested the optics of the human eye could be altered by placing the cornea directly in contact with water. But it's true that when contact lenses were invented for real came much later. Many believe Da Vinci's ideas eventually led to the development of contact lenses more than 350 years afterwards. In 1827, English astronomer Sir John Herschel proposed the idea of making a mold of a person's eyes. This was in 1827. Such molds would enable the production of corrective lenses that could conform to the front surface of the eye. But it was more than 50 years after that that someone actually produced such lenses, and there is some controversy about who did it first. Some reports say a German glassblower by the name of F. A. Muller used Herschel's ideas to create the first known glass contact lens in 1887. Other reports say that Swiss physician, whose name is Adolf Fick, and Paris optician Edward Kalt recreated and fitted the first glass contact lenses to correct vision problems in 1888. Early glass contact lenses were heavy and covered the entire front surface of the eye, including the white of the eye, the sclera. Because these large scleral lenses severely reduced the oxygen supply to the cornea, they could be tolerated for only a few hours of wear and failed to gain widespread acceptance. In 1936, New York optometrist William Feinblum introduced scleral lenses made of a combination of glass and plastic. These were significantly lighter than the older glass contacts. In 1948, California optician Kevin Tuohy introduced the first contact lenses that resembled the modern glass-permeable contact lenses of today. These all-plastic lenses were called corneal contact lenses because they were smaller in diameter than the previous contact lenses and covered only the clear front surface of the eye, the cornea. These early hard lenses were made of a non-porous plastic called polymethyl methacrylate, PMMA, polymethyl methacrylate. Though PMMA hard lenses were not gas permeable, they were fitted so that they could move with each blink, so oxygen-carrying tears could be sort of pumped under the lens to keep the cornea healthy. Properly fitted, corneal PMMA contact lenses could be worn for about 16 hours or even longer. Advances in lens manufacturing techniques and fitting expertise among eye doctors led to the mass appeal of these hard plastic lenses in the 1950s and 1960s. Perhaps the biggest event in the history of contact lenses was the invention of the first hydrophilic, or water-loving, hydrogel, soft contact lens material done by the Czech chemists whose names are Otto Wiktorly and Drahoslav Lim. This was done in 1959. Wiktorly and Lim's discovery led to the 1971 launch of the first FDA-approved soft contact lenses in the United States. And these were Bausch & Lomb's Soft Lens, S-O-F, capital L-E-N-S, Bausch & Lomb Soft Lens in 1971. Because of their greater comfort, soft contacts soon became more popular than hard contact lenses made of the old PMMA. Today, despite the availability of rigid gas-permeable contacts that often provide sharper vision than soft lenses and extremely good oxygen permeability, more than 90% of contact lenses prescribed in the United States are soft lenses. Next, we'll find out something about sunglasses. This information actually came from a genealogy website. Someone was researching the history of their family, the connection to the Foster Grant sunglasses. So the information came from FamilyTreeMagazine.com. The headline reads, "Made in the Shades, the History of Sunglasses," written by David Frixel. 50 years ago, the Geer Dubois advertising agency first asked the question, "Who's behind those Foster Grants?" The answers included such film stars as Peter Sellers, Louis Jourdan, and Claudia Cardinale, and sunglasses would never be the same. The campaign ranked 66th in Advertising Age's list of the greatest of the 20th century, made Foster Grant one of America's best-known brands. But hardly anybody knows Sam Foster, the Austrian immigrant who founded the company along with William Grant in 1919. Foster first popularized sunglasses on the Atlantic City boardwalk in 1929. Read on to learn more about the history of sunglasses and the man who turned them into a status symbol. Fashion and function. People had been shielding their eyes from the sun's glare for centuries, of course. The early Inuit people wore goggles of walrus ivory or caribou antler with only narrow slits carved in them to admit the brilliant Arctic sun reflecting off the snow. Roman Emperor Nero supposedly enjoyed watching gladiatorial combat through polished green gems. In early China, judges donned smoky quartz panes of glass, not for sun protection, but to conceal any telltale expressions from their eyes. Eyeglasses for vision correction were invented in Italy at about 1284, possibly by a Florence experimenter named Salvino Darmate. The story goes that Darmate had injured his eyes studying light refraction, and he invented eyeglasses for his own use. Early eyeglasses helped only with the farsightedness. Lenses to treat nearsightedness came along in the 1400s, and astigmatism sufferers had to wait until 1825. More important to the future of sunglasses, however, was the invention of eyeglass frames with temple pieces that extended to the ears by Spanish craftsmen in the 1600s. No longer did glasses have to perch only on the nose, although this what's called pince-nez or pinch-nose style made a comeback in the 1840s. An extreme variation called wig spectacles became popular in the 1700s. These devices had temple pieces that extended far beyond the ears into the wigs worn by men. Perhaps in response, women who associated eyeglasses with infirmity and old age adopted the lorgnette, a handheld spectacle with a handle that could be employed only as needed. By the mid-1800s, lorgnette designs also incorporated mechanical pencils, fans, or ear trumpets. None of these innovations did much to protect the eyes in bright sunlight, however. Even the inventor commonly credited with the developing of tinted lenses, James Eiskopf, in 1752, was not interested in sun protection. He thought green and blue tinted lenses would correct impaired vision. So along came Sam Foster, who had co-founded his firm in Leominster, Massachusetts, to produce women's hair accessories. It turned out that the newfangled plastic injection molding technology used in such products was also perfect for sunglasses frames. The breakthrough came in handy when a trend toward shorter women's hairstyles also abbreviated Foster Grant's profits. According to genealogy research by Foster's relative, Samuel I. Foster Jr. was born in Skala, Austria, a suburb of Vienna, on June 22, 1883, to an Ashkenazi Jewish family with Russian roots. His parents were Samuel Shmuel Karl Foster and Fanny or Frida Talchinsky. although the name Foster was probably not the family's original name. According to the 1920 U.S. Census, which shows Sam Foster in what's called a celluloid business, he immigrated in 1896 and was naturalized in 1915. Foster's first enterprise, producing fireworks, literally blew up on him. After learning the plastics trade with a company called the Visicoloid, he struck out on his own again with a salesman whose name was William Grant. That partnership lasted only a few months, the story goes, but finances were so tight at the time that Foster couldn't afford to change the company name. A lucrative account producing plastic dice for Kresge stores saved the business until sunglasses came along. In 1929, Foster convinced the Woolworth store on the famous Atlantic City, New Jersey boardwalk to sell 10-cent sunglasses, the first to be sold over the counter rather than ordered from an optician. Foster's persistence soon got his sunglasses into other stores that also sold the company's hair accessories. He would say something like, "Okay, let me dress up this window for you, and if you don't sell the sunglasses, I'll come back and pick them up." That was according to records about Mr. Foster. And before long, stores from coast to coast were begging him for more sunglasses. By 1938, Life magazine reported that 20 million sunglasses had been sold the previous year, calling them a new fad for wear on city streets, a favorite affectation of thousands of women all over the United States. Movie stars donned them either as a disguise against the paparazzi or to mask their red eyes from the harsh arc lights used on the sets. The King of Egypt was seen sporting sunglasses. A history published in the Optician magazine noted the significance of sunglasses' rise to popularity in the depths of the Depression. There's a quote, "Sunglasses spelt glamour and wealth in years which had precious little of either." This was quoted from Optician magazine. Sunglasses had increasingly practical benefits, too. In 1936, Edwin H. Land began making lenses with his Polaroid filter. The following year, as war loomed in Europe, Bausch & Lomb created the first Ray-Ban aviator-style sunglasses for the U.S. Army Air Corps to protect pilots' eyes from glare. But it was advertising, $1 million a year by the mid-1970s, including a sponsorship of the World Series, that made Foster Grant synonymous with sunglasses and glamour, even though most of their products were moderately priced. Sam Foster moved to California in 1942. While his son Joseph took over the company, Sam turned his attention to inventing an automatic car parking device. He died in Los Angeles in 1966 at the age of 83, his passing little noticed, even in that sunglasses-mad city. So Foster Grant was no longer a family firm. Goody Products, a New Jersey company, also in the hair accessories business, had bought a half interest in the company the same year Foster Grant introduced its sunglasses. Over the years, Goody kept selling its stock to finance its other businesses. In 1970, the company called United Brands, it's a conglomerate, began buying up Foster Grant stock with an eye to a takeover. A battle for control ensued until United Brands suffered major losses. In 1974, a hurricane wiped out its banana plantations in Honduras. And by the time the dust settled, the German pharmaceutical firm called Hoechst, H-O-E-C-H-S-T, had bought both United Brands and Goody's holdings in the company. Foster Grant went through four more acquisitions, along with several aborted deals, and a bankruptcy by 1996. Today, however, the company is back on its feet. It even has launched a new campaign featuring model Cindy Crawford, race driver Jeff Gordon, and actress Brooke Shields as the answers to the question, who's behind those Foster Grants? Next, I have a couple of fun facts for you. Additional celebrities featured over the years in the Foster Grant ad campaign include Woody Allen, Raquel Welch, Peter Sellers, Anthony Quinn, Mia Farrow, and Elka Summer. And one more, Leominster, Massachusetts, where Foster Grant Sunglasses emerged from a plastics manufacturing business, is now home to something called the National Plastics Center and Museum. Now, before I go on to the history of telescopes, I thought I should give you a little background into how telescopes are now actually used by people with low vision. This information came from a publication called Vision Aware. It's called Distance Optical Devices, or telescopes. Distance optical devices can be either handheld, clip-on, or mounted in a frame to be hands-free. They can be used for brief spot-reading tasks, such as reading a sign, reading a menu board, or looking at the whiteboard in a school setting. They can also be used for longer viewing periods, such as watching television, seeing a movie or a ball game, viewing a play or a program, or just enjoying the scenery. There are three types of telescopes used as optical devices today. First one is handheld. A handheld telescope is called a telescopic monocular because it's used with one eye and has a single eyepiece. Generally, it's used for short viewing periods, such as reading a street sign, finding a house number, reading a menu board in the restaurant, or an aisle number in the grocery store, or a whiteboard in school. Some people may also use it for tasks that are fairly close, such as reading the bathroom scale, or a price on a shelf at a grocery store. These are handheld telescopes, or monoculars. And please note, monocular telescopes also come in clip-on versions that attach to eyeglass frames and therefore leave both hands free. This hybrid telescope can be used with one eye for longer periods of time, such as viewing a PowerPoint presentation or watching television. Now, the next type of telescopic-type optical devices would be the spectacle-mounted telescope. Spectacle-mounted telescopes are simply permanently attached to the lens of your eyeglasses. And then next we have bioptic telescopes. Bioptic telescopic glasses are a type of spectacle-mounted telescopic glasses. They are mounted in the upper part of the eyeglass lens. You can think of bifocals where the lens is split into two different viewing sections. Bioptic telescopes are mounted in the upper part of the eyeglass frames, or the lenses. This placement allows the user to look through the bottom half of the lens while seeing most items at a distance and looking through the telescopes at the top of the glasses to see a magnified image. Some states, under strictly specified conditions, are allowing some persons with low vision to use bioptic telescopes for driving. In states where this is not legal, some persons with low vision use bioptic telescopes for reading, doing handwork, and other tasks. Next, we have a couple of more explanations for you. This comes from a website called Ocutech.com, and this explains the two types of telescopes that are used for help with low vision. The first one, this is going to lead to the next article, the first one is the Galilean telescope, and the next one is the Keplerian telescope. The Galilean telescope contains a convex objective lens and a concave eyepiece lens. Two lenses in the Galilean telescope. The telescope is short, but it provides a narrower field of view than the Keplerian designs, especially in higher powers. And next, the Keplerian telescope contains a convex objective lens and a convex eyepiece lens. The system is longer because it requires prisms to properly orient the image. It provides a wider field of view than the Galilean optical designs. So with those little hints about what's coming, we have a brief history of the telescope from 1608 all the way up to gamma rays in 2021. This comes from interestingengineering.com, a website. And now, I know that the title sounds rather daunting, but don't worry. I'm only going to bring you information about the first three telescopes invented. And we'll only be going from 1608 to 1611. That'll be fine for us today. The article was written by Christopher McFadden. The telescope was first patented in 1608. But over the last 400 years, it has increased in complexity to a great extent. The telescope has undergone an enormous transformation since it was first developed in the 17th century. Some of the greatest minds, from Galileo to Sir Isaac Newton to the great Edwin Hubble, would all contribute over time to the development of some of the most advanced scientific pieces of equipment ever devised by man. Number 1. The telescope was first patented in 1608. Dutch eyeglass maker Hans Lippershey, or maybe it was Lipperhey. Anyhow, Hans Lippershey is widely credited as the first person to patent a telescope in 1608. His device was called a Kijker, K-I-J-K-E-R, or also translated to mean looker, was, according to Hans himself, able to magnify an image up to 3 times. It consisted of a concave eyepiece that was aligned with another convex objective lens. According to legend, he conceived of the idea when seeing 2 children holding up 2 lenses that appeared to make a distant weather vane appear closer. Despite his patent, some contemporaries claimed he stole their idea, and one notable example includes another eyeglass maker from the same town called Zacharias Janssen. He was a contemporary of Hans Lippershey. Many historians fully recognize Lippershey as the inventor of the first telescope. However, it's due to his actual patent application. It does appear that both of these men independently created their own designs, with Janssen being credited with inventing the compound microscope. This, however, was not the end of the story. A man named Jacob Metius also laid claim to the invention of the telescope shortly after Lippershey. When he also applied for a patent, both applications were rejected due to the counterclaims and the official's opinion that it was too easy to reproduce the telescope. Both men received a reward, with Metius receiving a nominal sum, and Lippershey was awarded a significant commission to make copies of his telescope. His telescopes would later be supplied to high society around Europe, including to Henry IV of France. It was Hans Lippershey's telescope that would later catch the eye of someone named Jacques Bouvier of Paris. He reported the invention to none other than Galileo, who promptly began to build his own. Now here's some details about this segment. This man was also known as Hans Lippershey, or maybe at some point he was known as Johann Lippershey. He was born in Wesel, Germany, which is near Essen, and he soon moved to a town called Middelburg in Holland. So now we go on to that second telescope. Galileo used his telescope to peer into the cosmos. This was in 1609. It seems like it's the very next year. Galileo in Italy heard about Hans Lippershey's ingenious device via his French associate Jacques Bouvier in 1609. He immediately set about designing and building his own without even seeing Hans Lippershey's device. He was able to make significant improvements on the performance of his telescope, reaching magnifications of around 20 times. Pleased with his creation, he subsequently presented it to the Venetian Senate, who rewarded him as a lecturer at the University of Padua for life. As impressive as this was, he went further, as history attests. Galileo would be the first recorded person to point his telescope skyward. With his telescope, he was able to make out the cratered surfaces on the moon. He was able to draw the moon's phases in detail, and he even described the Milky Way. His observations also led him to discover the rings of Saturn, sunspots, and Jupiter's moons. Galileo would quickly become convinced that Copernicus's heliocentric model was absolutely correct, a position that would ultimately see him put under house arrest by the Catholic Inquisition until his death in 1642. And the third telescope, the Keplerian telescope, was devised in 1611. After the groundbreaking work of Hans Lippershey and Galileo, other scientists around Europe began to design and build their own telescopes. Chief amongst the early pioneers was the one and only Johannes Kepler from Germany. Kepler made detailed studies of telescopic optics and devised his own apparatus with two convex lenses. This became the famous Keplerian telescope. He built it in 1611, and it greatly improved the device's magnification, but rendered the observed image upside down. Apart from his significant contributions to astronomy, he was instrumental in the field of optics in general. His groundbreaking manuscript, which is titled Astronomia Pars Optica, would earn him the title of the founder of modern optics. This book contained his observations and rationalizations about many aspects of optics, including the use of pinhole cameras to take pictures, explanations about the refraction in the eye, and his understanding of depth perception. A later work of his, called Dioptris, made him the first person in history to describe real, virtual, upright, and inverted images, and the concept of magnification. He would also become the first person to explain how a telescope actually works. Kepler also discovered the properties of total internal reflection. Well, this very well-written article goes on to describe the history of telescopes in interesting detail, all the way up to the James Webb Space Telescope, supposed to replace the Hubble, and will hopefully be launched about a year from now in the fall of 2021. This one, used for astronomy, not for vision rehabilitation, of course. Well, in trying to summarize today's program, I could say we started way back in ancient Rome with the first sunglasses. We discovered the origins of telescopes in the 1600s, and we ended up in the 20th century with the invention of contact lenses. It was a quick journey through time. To end the program today, I have a quote for you to think about. The more you know about the past, the better prepared you are for the future. This was said by Theodore Roosevelt, the 26th President of the United States, who served from 1901 to 1909. Thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great week.